Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you for joining me today. I truly, truly appreciate it. And if you've been here before, welcome back. If you have not been here before, welcome to the show. I hope you dig it. We're a little bit different than some other shows. We kind of just like to get to the point. So with that in mind, let's get to it. My guest today is a Canadian who had hit absolute rock bottom. Like, seriously, wait till you hear this. But before crawling her way up to the top, it has not been easy, but it's definitely paying off. She's the founder of Fatso Peanut Butter, an all-natural peanut butter that began as a side hustle in the back kitchen of a local restaurant. After going full-time and then growing the company herself, in October of 2018, she went on to Dragon's Den. This is Canada's version of Shark Tank. Her ask on the show was $200,000 for 15% of the company. She received four offers in the episode, and she made a handshake deal for $200,000 for 30% of the company. After the recording, she met with the Dragons to formalize the deal with the new numbers. A Fatso peanut butter had been evaluated at twice its original amount, and she wanted the offer to reflect that. In the end, she walked away from the deal. She has since received some local funding and grown Fatso to be in 1,200 retailers nationwide, with some amazing deals coming her way that you're going to hear about shortly. Now, let's hack Jill Van Gene. So, with American Thanksgiving behind us, that leaves us with just a few weeks before the holidays, which means gift giving to people that you love. And what if you could combine gift giving with educating yourself, making yourself better, and preparing yourself for 2020? I would say that you can do this very well with the buy one, get one free offer from Masterclass. When you buy one annual Masterclass All Access Pass for yourself, you'll get another one to gift for free. Masterclass lets you learn from the best with exclusive access to online classes taught by masters of their craft. You can learn business leadership from Howard Schultz. You can learn self-made entrepreneurship from Sarah Blakely, or you can learn how to play poker from Phil Ivey if you wish. From design to cooking to music to writing, you can learn almost anything from people at the top of their game. With over 65 wide-ranging class offerings, there's something for everyone. And for a limited time, as I said, when you buy one annual Masterclass All Access Pass for yourself, you'll get another one to gift for free. Go to masterclass.com/hack to get started with this limited time offer. Buy one All Access Pass and get one free to gift at masterclass.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest. Jill, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking time out to do this. I've been really looking forward to this.
Thank you. Yeah, me too.
Let's just jump straight into it.
Okay.
So I've been looking into you a bit, Jill. And so you're a person who wears, I'm going to say, many hats. You've many different aspects to you as a human being. But today, now, we are talking to Jill, the entrepreneur. So I want to start here, Jill. As an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Definitely recognizing the fact that I lack a lot of expertise in the realm of business. I think that was like my first realization, was that like, I don't come from an entrepreneurial background. I don't have like an MBA or a BCom degree. I never had aspirations to be an entrepreneur. So when I started Fatso Peanut Butter, I mean, my sort of coming to entrepreneurship is a bit of a convoluted story. And definitely not a conventional one, but I remember clearly, you know, just starting out, especially with a food business, it's very complicated. It's not just a matter of getting a business license and getting your website up and running. When you're dealing with food, there's a lot of intricacies, and I just realized how inexperienced I was with building a business and building a food business in particular. Right. I've actually opened a restaurant before, so that's one type of food business, but like consumer packaged goods comes with a whole host of issues with it. So I remember early on thinking I need the expertise of other people to help me get to where I'm going. And that's kind of been a mantra for me. And it's worked really well because I think I didn't want to fall into that trap of a headstrong CEO, of a entrepreneur that thinks they know everything. And I came to this with a lot of humility because I had been so painfully unemployed in a year and a half before I started Fatso, that whole experience was so humbling. And recognizing a lack of expertise and industry that I had zero experience in really helped me to gather the team that I have today, helped me capitalize on the resources that were available to me without fear of judgment and without feeling like I should have to do it on my own, because I really sort of started at a rock bottom and built myself up to the company that we have today. So I guess to sum up is coming into entrepreneurship with a bit of humility and capitalizing on the expertise around me was the single most important thing that I did early on.
So most people in this world, Jill, I think if especially a year and a half unemployed, it's it can be hard on your ego, your self-esteem, everything, right? All these things adding up. Yeah. You feel like you don't have the experience for business. Now you want to start, you're right, like it's a business, you're making a product. It's hard. Yeah. It's super hard. And I think most people take that and just like, I get that's just not for me, obviously. But how do you get this feeling of, no, I just need to get people around me who can actually do these certain things that I can't do?
Yeah, I mean, like one of the things I knew that I was good at, you know, I've had a lot of time to think about like what is the specific skill that has made me successful in business? And I remember I was doing a master's degree, which is what got me unemployed in the first place. I did a master's degree in the social sciences in international development. But I remember one really specific, and it's the memory that sticks with me the most, was it was our end of year project or end of the program project that we had. And it was, of course, one of these like group projects. And I was somewhat of a mediator I was tasking everything out. And I remember this time where I was fielding questions from the class and from the people who were marking us. And you know, one of the people on my team wanted to ask a question that was not in his field, and there was somebody else. And I remember shifting, saying, you know what, let's let this person answer that question because this is their area of expertise. And the professor who was grading it commented on that later, and he said, you were really adept at pointing out what other people's expertise was. And I didn't know that at the time, but that is what my expertise are. And I think that, you know, I think if you ask a lot of people, you know, what does a CEO do? And I think you'll get a lot of different answers. And for me, I realized that, you know, and I ran my company as the sole employee up until September of last year. And so I really had to rely on outside contractors and outside resources to help me build a business. And what I've come to realize is that the objective of a CEO is to build that team and to lead that team. And in order to do that effectively, you have to be able to recognize your own limitations. And you know, I bumbled my way through a lot of stuff. I'm not saying I had this perception from the beginning, but I do remember thinking like, I have limitations on this. And I'm lucky, like I have, that's one of maybe the better personality qualities that I have is that I'm quick to say like, this is not my domain. This is not where I belong. This is me out of school. And so being able to shift quickly into that mode instead of saying like, I've got to do this all on my own and pull myself up by the bootstraps. And I did some of that, but bringing in the experts, I remember thinking like, I remember the first time I brought on a contractor being like, oh, this is great, right? I'm getting somebody who's really good at this job, and they just contribute to the building of the business. So I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, I really feel like the ability to see that early on in your business is really important.
It absolutely answers my question. And with this definition of CEO is like the person to build that team around you who can fill in these sort of gaps. When you were the sole employee of Fatso, and then also hiring contractors to help you in different spots, did you still refer to yourself as a CEO at that point?
I didn't for a long time. I didn't really, I mean, I knew that that's what I was on paper, but I almost was like a little bit embarrassed to do it because it felt a bit silly to have this little peanut butter company and to call myself a CEO. It sort of felt like there was like, it was almost hiding behind something. And I've been burned so many times since I had graduated from my master's degree with just trying to find my way in the world. And I was very cautious when I started Fatso. I had this situation, and I love talking about periods of unemployment. I think so many people go through it, and there's so much stigma attached to it and so much shame attached to it that there's a lot of people don't like to speak about it. It's very easy for me to talk about it now because I've had some degree of success, but I really came from this sort of rock bottom place when I started Fatso. And then as I started to build it up, I was very cautious about thinking I had any type of success until we started to have some feedback. You know, we won a few awards and had a lot of people that were interested in the business, and it just seemed to be gaining a ton of ground. And that's when I started to be like, okay, well, now I can kind of enjoy the success. But even now, I mean, we've just had this incredible year. I mean, could never have imagined that this little peanut butter company that I started in the back of a health food restaurant would be the company it is today. But I'm still extremely cautious about being like, okay, we're going to be a $10 million company in 5 years. That's what we want to say. And I think it's doable. And I think we actually have the possibility of being better than that. But we definitely do have some, I'm going to apologize. I have a 3-month-old son who's coming back into the house with granny right now.
So, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, so this idea of being a CEO, like there's this connotation of power and of success with that term. And there's a lot built up to it, right? And I don't allow myself to dwell too much on our successes. Like I'm happy to enjoy it, but I am always very aware that we will have a ways to go to get to those new goals. So it took me a long time to refer to myself as a CEO. For a long time, I was just like, oh, I'm just Jill. I'm starting this silly business and don't mind me. And you know, that type of thing. And now we've had a year where we're closing our year out at $2.4 million. And we're profitable for the third time, third year in a row. And it's great, but there are still things that we have to keep it profitable. And we have to keep those sales numbers moving exponentially in new markets and all that type of stuff. So it's great. When people ask me, what do you do for work? I don't say I'm a CEO. I just say, oh, I own a peanut butter company. And I let it go from there. But that has a lot to do with like being burned so many times with like trying to be successful and trying to walk that walk and, you know, being put back down so many times. And now that I have that degree of success, I always want to sort of keep that little piece of humility in my back pocket and say, you know, this is something that you can't take for granted because it could be pulled out from underneath you at any time. So today, I'll certainly say like, yes, I'm the CEO of this company because it makes sense to me. Once you're like kind of, when you're operating in the millions, it feels like you can do that. But you know, the first year where I did 50,000, which was absolutely incredible. I mean, I was like blown away that people would buy that much peanut butter for me. But then it didn't feel quite right. But I'm sort of finding my stride in this CEO, the founder role, and really exploring what that means and what that looks like for me and for the company.
I love it. And okay, so I agree with you fully. So I need to back up a little bit because you've mentioned the unemployment and such a couple times now. And I fully agree with you. Like it's easy for you to talk about now because you have success, right? Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that makes quote unquote a good story. Like, it rags to riches, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't always help people in the moment, right? Because it's hard. So can you just sort of, I mean, as much as you want to, just sort of like tell us, you said rock bottom. So like, what does rock bottom mean? Just to see if somebody can identify with it out there listening.
For sure.
And then I do want to know how that comes into, I'm going to make peanut butter.
Right. So
of all the things in the world. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, there's a number of things that happen there, but I'll talk about the rock bottom. So I've actually been in recovery from addiction for 9 years now. So I know what a real, like every sense of the word, rock bottom. I know what that looks like. So I went through this period of time where, you know, you had to start from the bottom again. You're rebuilding your life. And I thought a master's degree was the answer to that. It seemed to be the thing, and I think it's a lot of the thing that I was born in 1980, so I'm not a millennial and I'm not a Gen Xer. I'm the lost generation, I think they call us, but basically I'm somewhere in there. But I think a lot of us, there was this form, it's a very formulaic way of life. We were told that you grow up, you go to school and you get that degree and then you're going to get the job, you're going to get the house, the family, et cetera, right? And that was the reality for our parents, but it certainly wasn't the reality for us. And that's just the advice that we were given. And it was always drilled into me, you need to go back to school to do this stuff. So, you know, I went through the motions of doing this after I entered into recovery. And I think that's been like, that was this ground shaking rock bottom. I mean, when I was in hit rock bottom because of drug and alcohol use, it was, that was a kind of an expected rock bottom. Like you kind of know what you're getting into, where that, you know, where you start from, you know, you got to get, you know, you enter into recovery, you find sobriety, and then you build your life up from there. But I did not have a concept of what it was like to, I graduated top of my class and I went off and I had worked with, I was hired by the London School of Economics to publish my research. And I had an offer of a PhD to go across to the UK. And I just thought, do I want to do a PhD and then end up being 40? And I've been watching friends that had going through graduating from a PhD or trying to get one. And it was really tough to watch because A, they were fighting for jobs that weren't going to pay them anything. And B, there weren't jobs out there. There just wasn't those type of positions available. My mom got a tenure position, I think, when she was 28 at the University of Victoria. That's not what's happening for people that age today. And so when I graduated from my master's degree and started looking for jobs, I realized like they wanted 10 plus years experience. And I didn't have that experience. I had the education, but I didn't have 10 plus years experience working in the international field, for example. The PhD, yeah, I'd probably do great in a PhD, but after that, I'm going to be what, like $50,000, $60,000, maybe $70,000 in debt. And fighting for postdoc positions or like adjunct professorships. And I just thought like that was so terrifying to me. And I just thought, oh my God, like I can't do this PhD. So I'm trying to find a job out here. And like that was like earth shattering to me. I mean, almost more so than it was recovering from drugs and alcohol because that had a level of predictability to it, right? There was almost a guarantee. It's like, if you sober up, you're going to get your life back in some way, which I did because anything was better than what was happening to me before. But now I had spent 2 years and been told like I remember shortly after I convocated, I had a plaque come in the mail that commemorated the fact that I graduated at top of my class. And I was so distraught about the job market and what I had just done in the past 2 years. And what this plaque meant is that I threw that plaque out because it felt like a slap in the face in a way, because I don't need a plaque. I need a job. And I couldn't find a job. There was a hiring freeze in the government. And I remember like I was fighting for jobs that were like I probably went to, I don't know, over that probably about a year, at least 15 to 20 job interviews, getting to second and third rounds. And then, you know, I remember a couple times like the job just all of a sudden didn't exist anymore. They just said, this job, we just erased this job. So nobody's getting it. And there was like entry-level positions and it drove me to this place where I was absolutely distraught and depressed. And I know that there are people going through that right now. And, you know, having some distance from it and also having had a degree of experience in recovery and being able to identify when things are getting rough, I think there's a lot of talk about like depression and mental illness, but it's particularly for people who are, they put the work in and they still are coming up empty. And the job market can be very daunting these days and has been that way. And I think it will continue to be that way. And I think we're about to see a lot of people who are falling into these types of depressive episodes and threatening their mental health because this formula that we've been told that we must do of pursuing a bachelor's and now a master's degree, which is necessary for almost any real job. I think we're about to see a lot of mental health issues come up around that. And I know that I tiptoed very, very close to that in that period of unemployment. And I ended up, the job I ended up taking was working for a local health food restaurant. We were going to try and franchise it. And you talk about like why I came into this, the field of entrepreneurship with a degree of humility. Well, you get knocked down so many times and you end up taking this job that is just so far away from what you had originally intended. And so I took that job, but that's what led me to FASO was I got to this point where instead of like my rock bottom, I didn't dwell down there for too long, but I got, you kind of reach this like interesting form of insanity when it's like almost like, it's like a dark comedy. It's just, it's almost laughable. Like you've worked so hard and like, here you are, you've retaking control of your life again twice over and you're still trying to claw your way up. And in some ways it's kind of funny. And I think you get this like kind of type of like insanity and recklessness that in fact opens up a ton of opportunity. And I actually had somebody ask me once, well, how do you get there? And I said, well, I don't recommend it because I had to sacrifice a lot of my mental health to get there. But there is this level where you get to and it's just like anything seems like a good idea. And so this, I actually had bought FASO in 2016. It was this small company being run into the ground by two people who just, I don't know, they didn't know what they were doing. I saw the product and I thought, this is such an amazing product. And we kept on, we kept on trying to keep it in stock at the health food restaurant. It was on a couple shelves here in Victoria. But, and I would talk to like the grocery managers around town and say, you know, what's going on with this product? We can never get our hands on it. And said, yeah, the guy that runs it, we can never get a hold of them. And he's kind of a jerk. And there was all these issues with it. And I thought, you know, this is too bad. So I approached them and said, I'd love to buy in and help you guys really build this business up. And they rejected me. And I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to keep my eye on it. And one day I got wind that their inventory had been seized by our local health authority because apparently they had just been mixing it out of their basement or something instead of like an actual facility. So better believe I got it for bottom dollar because, I mean, the brand was just, I mean, once like a health authority is involved with a food product, that's not something you come back from easily. So, and all the retail relationships are completely decimated. So I approached them again and said, you know, I'll take it off your hands for a small amount of money. And they agreed to that. And I just thought, all right, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with this, but I'm going to make a run of it. And it was that sort of opportunity. It's like if I had taken a job with the government for, let's say, a temporary auxiliary position in the bowels of our legislature, and this opportunity came up, I would be like, no, I'm on my way up in the government. I'm sticking here, right? This is where the action's going to happen. I would have been grateful for this $20 an hour job that may or may not exist in 2 or 3 months' time. And I would have stuck with that. But after like being, I'm 36 and looking at my life and going, well, starting a peanut butter company can't be the craziest thing I've ever done. So that's what I did. And it was funny because the first year that I had my business, it was really run out of this place of fear. I mean, I lived in fear for so long because it was this fear of not being successful. And, you know, you're grappling with having this degree and not finding a job and constantly being shot down in job interviews. And, you know, your ego definitely takes a beating, as you said, and it's a hard thing to come back from. And, you know, starting a business, I can tell you that like, you want to find out what your insecurities are, start a business. Because that will tell you that it'll show you what you're made of. And oftentimes you'll be facing a ton of rejection. And I think the people that are out there that are struggling with this, I wish there was an answer that I could give them and be like, oh, this is the thing that's going to pull them out of this depression. And the thing that kept me going was that there's going to be a point in time where things are going to be okay. They may not be a ton better, but they're going to be okay. And I knew that like, I just needed to put my head down and keep going. But the thing that I would offer as opposed to this is the thing that got me out of this, is not this is the thing that got me out of this, is just please be aware of how you are emotionally while you're going through this, because our identities are so often tied to how we're productive in society, right? So how we contribute to the market in any sense. And if you tie your identity and your sense of worth too tightly to that, as I did, trying to figure out how to get out of that can be very difficult because it becomes an emotional attachment. So if you're there and you are feeling that level of desperation, just start to take care of yourself emotionally, because you will do yourself no good if, you know, you're still looking for work and you're not doing okay. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, people didn't used to do, is really take care of themselves for their mental health and their emotional stability, because that comes first, ultimately. So that's what I would offer to people in that position right now.
Which I feel is super, super helpful and beneficial. Obviously, everyone's going to accept that or take it in different ways,
sure,
which is fine and good, but it's really valuable you saying all of that for them. And I would love to know, Jill, how this understanding of unemployment, this understanding of rock bottom, this understanding how our success ties to our mental health and how the job market is complete kind of a shit show in a lot of ways for a lot of people.
Yeah.
How does this affect you as a CEO, like when hiring and when being a boss?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I'm so, you know, there's a number of things that has influenced how I run my business. Like, you know, the experience that I have had has really informed A, how I treat my employees, and B, how I utilize my business to fulfill some of the things that I was unable to fulfill. So first of all, with my employees, I have a firm belief, like, I do not ask them to stick to like a 30 or 40 hour work week. I do not give them a hard 3 weeks vacation. Salaries are negotiable. I do not track their hours. If they're getting their work done, I'm happy. And if they need time off, they're getting it. And we're only three people. I have a chief growth officer who came on in February. And I have an operations manager who's transitioning into more of an executive role as like an operations director. And I wanted early on to have like a philosophy, because I just remember, like, I know now that I am not an individual who is supposed to work for other people. And that's not like I won't work for other people. That's just like my personality is best suited when I'm able to self-direct, not necessarily direct other people, but self-direct. And I want to give people the opportunity to really explore. I mean, first of all, as you can probably deduce, mental health and emotional well-being, I think, is a super important part of the life experience, work inclusive. So really fostering that with my employees, I believe, is super important. And I'm sure that you've seen the news recently. I think Japan just started trials with a 4-day work week, and they saw productivity go up 40%. And, you know, I believe that. I, you know, dragging yourself into work because you have to be there from 9 to 5, 5 days a week seems ridiculous to me. If you don't have the work to support it, don't do it. But be productive with the hours that you're given. And that's actually worked so well for our team. They both work remotely. We all work remotely. And we get together once a week, sometimes every 2 weeks at my house. And we do staff meetings and we sort of do co-working. But I'm really aware that their health and wellness and their happiness within their job and their job satisfaction is going to be tied to how much I let them self-direct. And I've seen, we've only had really excellent working relationships. So that's definitely part of how I work, how my employees, how I view my employees coming to work for Fatso. And I will certainly carry that on, because I know that when they can behave as an entrepreneur, or they can behave as their own boss, they're going to create their own internal work culture and do what works for them. So that's great success. And then the second thing is, with the business that I have now, I've really been aware of, I've had so many successes, and I certainly will never, ever, you never catch me saying that I'm self-made entrepreneur because I wasn't, right? Like I borrowed money from my parents to start the business and I've had the support of my family and my spouse and, you know, I've been able to easily borrow money. I come from a, definitely come from a place of privilege. I can walk into a bank and get money pretty easily because I was raised from a good family and I've got good credit because I've had to help paying things off. And so I certainly come from a place of privilege. And with my ambitions to work in the realm of human rights and international development, I've seen an opportunity with FATSO to be able to become a socially conscious and socially driven company. And I've been able to do that because we've been profitable. And so I've decided to start putting some money and energy towards supporting some nonprofits and to supporting, you know, people that are marginalized in our communities. And that has been so fulfilling for me. I mean, it's great. Like I love my peanut butter. We have probably the best peanut butter on the market and we're doing great and it's super fun. But one of the most rewarding parts of this is that I've been able to use my company to, in fact, create the impact that I wanted to create when I was working towards my master's degree. So recently we partnered with a peer sex worker organization here in Victoria. So it's called Peers Victoria. So it's centered around safety for sex workers and the decriminalization of sex work. And I selected to work with this organization because when we look at sex work, it really intersects with so many of the issues that are important to me. So rights for people of color and Aboriginal communities, missing and murdered Indigenous women, LGBTQ plus issues, issues of poverty, mental health and addiction, domestic abuse. This all intersects within the larger framework of sex work. And so that's why I opted to work with this particular organization. So we just launched an initiative last week where 100% of our profits from our apparel sales will go directly to Peers here in Victoria. And one of the things that's been amazing from this, and the reason I chose to work with them, one of the other reasons I chose to work with them was on International Women's Day, we did a big fundraiser where I raised $1,500 and we donated it to Peers. And I found out later that it was one of the biggest single donations that they had received all year, which was amazing to me. I thought, well, that seems like really low and very easy for me to do. Like that was no problem to do that. And they just said, yeah, I mean, sex work is so stigmatized that, you know, nobody wants to be aligned with us. So a company like FATSO that has legitimacy lending their reputation to us really helps to reduce the stigma. I thought, well, that's just awesome. Let's do more. So we've really started to get the word out and there's, you know, we're hoping that other small businesses or any business or any person will start to look at these really highly stigmatized nonprofits that don't receive a ton of funding and start to put their money there because it's super easy to give back to like kids and animals or really huge foundations and that don't have a lot of controversy around them, like breast cancer or junior diabetes. I mean, those are amazing causes and very worthy causes, but also very highly funded by the government. So we wanted to focus on something that where we could make a really big splash and big impact with. And so all of this time that I've spent, my personal history, my work history and my experiences and how I've dealt with that have definitely informed how I run my business. And I can tell you this, it has only worked out to the company's benefit. And I believe strongly that companies that have demanded to be treated as a brand personality, which I've always found a bit funny because we want this brand personality, but when you have a personality, you have core beliefs. And if you have core beliefs, you need to be able to follow through on those. So I am sort of putting my money where my mouth is. And we found great success, great feedback when I treat my employees with a lot of respect and give them what they need to live happy and successful lives. And then we do the same with the business and giving back to the community that's given so much to us.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I highly, highly, absolutely like respect the fact that you would like support, I mean, like supporting sex workers and stuff like in Victoria. So everybody listening out there, if you don't know, Victoria is a big city on our Canada's beyond the East Coast. I mean, beyond the West Coast on Vancouver Island, it's out there on the water. And like the West Coast of most of North America, it does have a big problem with, I mean, we do too in Toronto, but I mean, the weather lends itself over West Coast to it's warmer. Yeah. It's people can survive on the street longer.
That's right.
So there's huge things. And so it's really awesome because it is, it's so stigmatized. And yeah. So it almost seems, Jill, to me, and like, correct me if I'm wrong, but rather than like lots of people, I mean, just as humans, but also starting a business, you want to just be like attracting new customers, attracting investors or people just like that want to be on your side. But it's almost like you can like repel people who would be put off by that. And it's like, you're
not. Well, yeah. And those people wouldn't be our sort of quote unquote brand at all. Right. Like, you know, we want to be able to, it's so exciting to me because the people that might be repelled by it wouldn't dare say it publicly because, well, you know, how the current culture operates. So, but we've only had people be really positive about it. And I think a lot of the time with these type of organizations, people just don't really think about it. They know it's there, but it's about giving them more substance to think about. So, and I think you look at like a lot of companies, I mean, there's a lot of, especially consumer packaged goods or CPGs, as we call them. A lot of these companies, these founder-led companies have had to, my personality, for example, bleeds into my business simply because these founder-led companies are sort of a newer phenomenon where our approach to culture and our worldview is infused in how we run our business. So a good example is Rebel out of the United States, big beverage company. And I love the work that they do. And they aim, I think they donate 2.5% of maybe, I think 2.5% of net sales to combat human trafficking. And then they do this sort of conscious supply chain where they will buy their ingredients from areas of the world that are plagued by human trafficking. And in doing so, they're able to offer more of an economic benefit to the people that are in those regions to focus on planting and growing and harvesting these ingredients and not having to enter into the human trafficking rings. So it's a really cool way of doing business. Another amazing one that I am totally obsessed with and is my second favorite nut butter company is one out of Portland called Ground Up. And they, I believe, hire disenfranchised women and former sex workers to make their nut butters, and they give them job skills and job training and the ability to move on with their lives. And I just, those type of companies, like, I want to support that. So I know other people want to support that, and people want to feel good about being capitalists, right? They want to be able to take back a little bit of the evilness that has sort of infused a lot of capitalist practices. And I think it's a really interesting way, because I think there's a huge debate around, can capitalism be ethical? Can it be socially responsible? And maybe, maybe not, maybe those things are at odds, but we can certainly try. And from what I've seen, our ability to not only give back to our community, but to run our business in an ethically minded way, that's the best we're going to do. And I know that consumers are increasingly starting to appreciate that and are increasingly wanting to put their dollars into businesses like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I love it. I wish we could talk all day, Jill. This is awesome. But we should wrap up for the listener because they've been enjoying it. But we've been talking about Fatso throughout this whole conversation. But now could you specifically, there's people listening, you've intrigued them. They want to try out this product and support you. So could you tell them what it is you guys sell and where they could track it down?
Yeah. So Fatso is an all-natural peanut butter, and I've enriched it with plant-based superfat. So the idea was to really compete against almond and cashew butters that were really expensive and they're not environmentally sustainable. Cashews have a ton of labor issues associated with them. So what we wanted to do was to create a nut butter that was extremely nutritionally dense, tasted amazing. But yeah, so I wanted to create a nut butter that really filled in this big gap in the market that was, you know, you got your Skippies and Jifs and these sort of lower cost peanut butters that are just straight peanuts. And then these really high priced almond and cashew butters. So creating a nutritionally dense, amazing tasting nut butter that wasn't going to empty your wallet. So you'll find ingredients like organic coconut oil, avocado oil, MCT oil. We've got chia flax, and then we use the prebiotic fiber that gives you a little bit of sweetness without the punch of the calories. So yeah, so people can go to eatfatso.com. We're also available on Amazon in Canada and in the United States. You can order 6-packs, and you can also order our apparel at eatfatso.com. And as I said before, 100% of those profits will go to Piers Victoria. But yeah, if you're looking for something that's in the keto realm, we're also gluten-free, vegan, non-GMO. Fatso is going to be a great option for you. And we've got 3 amazing flavors. We've got our classic, which is a bit coconutty. We've got our cocoa, which we use real cocoa butter and unsweetened chocolate in that one. And then our newest flavor, really popular, is the crunchy salted caramel. And that one is, yeah, that one's amazing. So if you're into crunchy peanut butter and a little bit of caramel taste, that one's hit all the points there.
Awesome. And it's available in over 1,200 retail locations.
Yes. Yeah. Right across Canada. And we just landed an exclusive contract with Whole Foods in Oregon and Washington. So we're in all the Whole Foods in Oregon and Washington for the next 3 months, and we'll continue to be in there. And then after that few months, we're looking to expand pretty aggressively into the United States. So if you're in the U.S., you can order it on Amazon, or if you're in Washington or Oregon, you can head to your local Whole Foods and find it there as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Eatfatso.com is the site. They're also on the social medias, Instagrams and such. I'll find links for that. I'll find the Amazon links for you. Eatfatso, Instagram, social media, and a couple of articles about the Piers and Fatso we're talking about. And so if you guys want to go deeper, once you're done walking, jogging, working out, whatever it is you're doing, it'll be over on the site for you under Jill Van Gene. Jill, once again, thank you so much for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so openly. I truly, truly, truly appreciate it. And
anytime.
Just keep doing what you're doing, because it is truly awesome and inspiring to watch.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. So we covered a lot of ground in this episode, and I've got a ton of notes that I need to go through so that I can pull out just one thing that Jill said and then go over it. But I'm going to do that. I'm ready. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
And this opportunity came up, I would be like, no, I'm on my way up in the government. I'm sticking here, right? This is where the action's going to happen. I would have been grateful for this $20 an hour job that may or may not exist in 2 or 3 months' time. And I would have stuck with that. But after I'm 36 and looking at my life and going, well, starting a peanut butter company can't be the craziest thing I've ever done. So that's what I did.
And that's the hack. Jill, Jill, Jill. I love this. I love this because the way you preface it and then the way you post-preface it, the way you cap it at the end. Well, I'm drawing a blank. But the idea that this comes from you getting a master's degree, winning awards, and being... like you're on the trajectory that people, you're right, like we're told to do. And yet you could not find a job after 15 or 20 different rounds of interviews and making it to the second and third round of interviews and things just drying up. You came across this opportunity for a small peanut butter company. And I love it because you said if you would have got one of those jobs in the government or wherever it was, you would have said, no, I'm not giving this $20 an hour job up. But due to that, you said, yeah, why not? What's the worst that can happen? And so as a side hustle on this job that you were working at a health food store, you started in the back making peanut butter and then going around town. And I love how you keep talking about how, like, for the first year, it was you just like going talking to local shop owners and stuff and seeing if they would take it. All these places are places in like decisions where there's like the why in the road and where so many people would have decided to stop or not take that or not take that. And you just kept following it, following it, following it. Now you're in thousands of different retailers, moving into different countries with your product. And it's absolutely amazing. And you're building a small team around it, which is crazy because this stems from you hitting rock bottom and just sort of being beaten down like so many people. And all of that, that could have just kept you down and taken you down. Like, you're right. There's some privilege. There's some luck. There's some all of those things. But it's also the, I mean, you did just keep doing it. You did just keep trying stuff because what's the worst that could happen? It's already this bad. What's the worst that could happen? Because you said you get to this like level of almost insanity that it just, whatever. Like, it can't get worse than this. So I might as well just try stuff. Right? When we get coddled too much, when we get that good job that makes just enough money, we never want to give it up to do the things that we actually want to do. Jill at that point didn't have that benefit. So she just went for it. And now here she is. Thank you so much, Jill. That was a lot of fun. All right. Hacktheentrepreneur.com. It's the site. If you've been over there recently, come on back. It's a great spot. You'll dig it. Get onto the email list. It's an easy thing to do. You can get my book for free if you want over there, or you can just read and see what we've been up to. Also, if you go to the podcast section of the site, you will find Jill. Jill Van Jean, her episode will be up there. With everything we talked about, I'll find links to all of that. Maybe even to Jill on the Dragon's Den. We'll see if we can dig that up or if it's under some weird Canadian copyright laws. Who knows? All right, it's been fun. I thank you so much for stopping by. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.